You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's hard to believe it's been a year since we lost Kobe and Gianna Bryant. In the football world, as you saw, the horrible news was realized during the Pro Bowl and deeply affected many NFL players. Kobe's legacy as an icon spanned far beyond basketball. Just days ago, Patrick Mahomes paid tribute after winning the AFC Championship. And Kobe's legacy as a competitor, a father, and a seeker of excellence lives on, with the gravity of his loss still heavy. The gravity of Gianna's life being cut so short is heartbreaking beyond words. Later this hour, we'll share our thoughts about Gigi and her dad, as so many around the world are doing today. And we send love to the Bryant family, as well as anyone who's experienced loss like this. We begin NFL Live today with Aaron Rodgers. And following another championship where Rodgers came up short, actually himself said there was uncertainty around his future after the loss on Sunday. Here's more from Rodgers with Pat McAfee today.
I don't feel like I said anything that I hadn't said before. I said it the first time I talked to the media. It was more a realization, I think, that my future is not necessarily in my control. And I think that was what just kind of hit me in the moment. I was thinking about, Aaron Jones and Corey Linsley and other guys we have under contract, Big Dog, guys who I don't know what their future is going to be, and myself included. Now, obviously, after the season that I had and, potentially win an MVP, and, we obviously made it another good run, I don't think that there's any reason why I wouldn't be back. But look, I think there's not many absolutes, as you guys know, in this business. And to me, a reality, not a certainty or an absolute, is that my future is not in my hands.
I don't think that there's any reason I wouldn't be back. That was what you just heard Aaron Rodgers say. Let's start with you, Adam Schefter, as Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears, and Dan Orlovsky is here today as well. You had told us yesterday that a lot of this lies in Rodgers' own hands. After hearing what he said today, what else can you add, Adam?
Well, it's interesting. I think today he tried to minimize the idea that gained some steam yesterday, because he opened it up on Sunday saying that his future was unresolved. It was a beautiful mystery. We didn't know. And I still think that there is a lot of power that resides within Aaron Rodgers. Now, again, he's saying that he plans to be back, but I think his comments allude to the fact that he has different relationships with different people in Green Bay who feel differently about him and he them. So it's not just a simple situation of, oh yeah, you could tell that there's a question in his mind. He thinks he'll be back, doesn't know he'll be back. That's the reality of the NFL, where there are, as he said, very few absolutes in the NFL from year to year.
Yeah, Adam brings up a good point, Dan. It feels like Aaron Rodgers was kind of trying to minimize, walk it back a little bit, and yet he still didn't come out and say, oh yeah, I'm a Packer for life, right? So there's still uncertainty. What's your reaction to what Rodgers said today?
Yeah, relatively unsurprised, Laura. Listen, Aaron is a very aware player. He's a very aware human being. He knows that he's the MVP of the NFL, right? He knows that he just had one of the best seasons he's ever had. And so for him to make the comment, like, I think I'll be back, is just being realistic and understanding, like, they drafted a kid in the first round last year. They didn't do what I wanted them to do. I obviously made it clear that I wanted them to take a receiver relatively early. And so while I am Aaron Rodgers, and while I did play incredibly well this year, and while it would be absolutely insane for Green Bay to let me go, I don't think they will. But I'm not in control of that because of my contract, because of them making the selection that they did last year. So I do believe that Aaron is very smart, very calculated in the things that he says. But at the end of the day, it was an emotional post-game press conference. And he does reference both their starting tailbacks aren't under contract. His number two receivers, not under contract. His starting tight ends, not under contract. his starting center, not under contract. So I think he's just referencing, like, there's a lot of question marks tied to this really good football team.
Mina, is Aaron Rodgers trying to put some pressure on the Packers here and say, give me some weapons, sign these guys? Is he using the media, is he using us right now to try and get this message out there to them?
I feel like I'm back in school, like close reading his comments, trying to analyze the text. But as Dan said, Aaron Rodgers is a very thoughtful, intelligent guy. When he says things and he makes comments, he makes them for a reason. I do think it's noteworthy that he mentioned some, you know, looming free agents that he would very much like to remain on the Green Bay Packers. And I don't blame him. Drafting Jordan Love was a mistake. I think there's no way around it. I understand the Packers, like other teams, want to think long-term, plan for the future. You always want to be looking for quarterbacks. But they took him in the first round, and he didn't play, or, you know, meaningful snaps. He was not useful to this football team. Aaron Rodgers is absolutely correct to be frustrated with that decision. Okay? It was a bad one. So here he is now. Returning to Green Bay, we don't have to write any more fan fiction about him in San Francisco or wherever. He's going to be a Packer next year. But he would like to influence the shape of this roster going forward. Okay. That's my big takeaway from his comments, and I don't blame him.
So it was my senior year. We were in Florida about to play the last bowl game, and we went to a theme park. And this theme park had wonderful turkey legs. It was a great place to go and ride roller coasters. It was a great place to just enjoy yourself. And here's the thing. A lot of my teammates, okay, laughed and chuckled about me not getting on roller coasters. I don't ride roller coasters because I don't want to die doing something I didn't have to do. That's the reason I don't ride roller coasters. So I'm down there with my wife. My wife now, but was my girlfriend at the time. And we eating and looking up at my teammates be stuck on this roller coaster for 30 minutes because they had a mechanical issue. I'm going to bring this home by telling y'all this. There ain't no way in hell I'm about to ride this Aaron Rodgers roller coaster with y'all. I ain't talking about this, what he feeling, what he think gonna happen. I'm not about to continue to be on this. The bottom line is this. When Aaron Rodgers said his future was unknown, that's the part that raised my eyebrows. Because believe it or not, America, Aaron Rodgers does control his own future. Because if Aaron Rodgers does not want to play with the Green Bay Packers, he's not going to be playing with the Green Bay Packers. That is it. I'm off the roller coaster. Mina and Dan, everybody else that want to talk about it, y'all enjoy. I ain't about to go up and down with you.
Yeah, I mean, we will be talking about it, you know, if Aaron Rodgers continues to. So, Marcus, we will leave you off the roller coaster there. By the way, I don't like roller coasters.
Just leave me off of
it. But it's only because I'm worried someone's eating a big lunch and it might end up on me during the ride. Let's talk about something else that happened during this little conversation with Pat McAfee and Aaron Rodgers. He brought up Dan Orlovsky, and let's take a listen.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, he's a big TV guy now, huh?
He's awesome. He is absolutely
come a long way from UConn, you know, in that Elite 11 camp where I met him. I'm a long, long way. I'm happy for him. He does a good job, and he actually...
I agree.
He brings some style to it, you know? Brings some style to it. I get some good outfits. Maybe an ascot might be... a la C. Wood, huh?
The best is Mina is yelling, oh, no, with everything they said about your style, Dan.
Wait.
Dan.
Wait,
you know
Rutledge.
What an ascot is.
I was literally just going to go whispers. An ascot is.
Yeah, Mina.
What?
Mina, will you explain?
You don't know what an ascot is?
Will somebody explain to Dan what an ascot is?
I grew up wearing.
What's wrong with you,
Listen,
man?
First of all. First
if Mina
all,
pulls
Marcus,
out an ascot right now.
I grew up wearing sweats.
Tuck it into your shirt.
I wore sweats every day.
Yep, that's
Second
it.
Second of all.
There you go, Dan.
You can't get emotional on television anymore if you won't ride roller coasters, okay? Like, that, we're discluding you or excluding you from trying to intimidate us yelling on us when you won't go 50 feet in the air.
Dan, an ascot is kind of like that napkin that Mina has wrapped around her neck. Dan can't see it right now, but we're going to show you in the break, Dan. Don't worry. We're going to show you in the break. Guys, we're just getting started on NFL Live. We got back here on NFL Live, and obviously the story with the Chiefs most always is Patrick Mahomes and offense-related, but en route to a Super Bowl last season, the Chiefs' defense started to shine, and it's shades of the same this year again as Kansas City back in the Super Bowl and their defense playing at a very high level at the right time. So let's talk a little more about that. Kansas City's defense wreaked havoc on the Bills' offense and Josh Allen on Sunday, but the pressure they got shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. Here's why. This season, the Chiefs' defense has recorded a pressure percentage of 35.8%, including the playoffs. That's good for the highest pressure percentage we've seen by a defense in a season since we started tracking this whole thing back in 2009. So, Mina, how did this Chiefs' defense shut down Josh Allen on Sunday?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, Laura, it wasn't just the pass rush. What we saw was kind of history repeating itself, because it's the same thing that happened last season down the stretch, which is that the secondaries heated up at the right time. All game long, playing very sticky coverage, confusing Josh Allen pre-snap. Look, we talk a lot about Tyrann Mathieu, rightfully so. The Honey Badger is one of the best defensive players in the NFL. But when I'm watching the game, I take down notes every time a defensive player makes a flash play. I wrote 22 over and over and over. That's Juan Thornhill, the other safety. He came into the season off the injury, and I'm not gonna lie, he struggled through a lot of the regular season, but he had the game of his life against Buffalo. He was physical, disciplined, and his presence on the field, grounding that secondary, it allows the Honey Badger to roam and do what he does best. Steve Spagnuolo has done a heck of a job with this unit, and they're as scary as they've been all year headed into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, going into the weekend, I actually sent out a tweet like, I think people are misrepresenting the Chiefs defense. Over the last like 9 or 10 games, they had given up an average of 20 points, playing a lot better than people thought. I also think this secondary has become a top 5 secondary in the NFL, both personnel-wise and then kind of scheme-wise. And if you look at down on the goal line, right, 4-man rush out of this Chiefs defense. So right now, as a quarterback, you're not thinking any kind of pressure. Man-to-man on the outside. But watch Tyrann Mathieu. When you're dealing with pressure, it's either is there intent or a threat. Just watch his movement. Watch his movement right there. Like, see that intent right there? Now watch Josh Allen backpedal. He's backpedaling like it's an all-out pressure, 7, 8, 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Two guys are wide open, but that ball gets forced out of his hands, I think because of the intent of Mathieu. And then watch this clip. RPO defense, vision on the running back. Mathieu can drop down front side, right? Now man-to-man on the outside, but watch Juan Thornhill. He's going to keep his eyes on the slot receiver, Cole Beasley. And that slot defender plays outside leverage. Well, Thornhill's waiting for that in-breaking route, and he's going to drive on it. When that happens, that slot defender's going to fall off. He knows something comes in, something's coming from the outside. He falls off, tip up, interception for that defense. And so you saw, like, Tyrann Mathieu, just kind of like that intent of here I'm coming, I think spooks Josh Allen to backpedal and think I'm getting all-out pressure, get off the field, field goal forced. And then that RPO defense, the way that they passed things off and played the proper coverage versus what the concept was, it was so impressive to watch. And that defense showed up this weekend.
And it's not an anomaly, y'all. Like, we talked about last year when this defense had their moments in the playoff run. Obviously, giving up big leads and then giving up zero after that and allowing Patrick Mahomes and that offense to come back and win those games. But two, like, y'all talked about the second level. The rush, the pass rush. We know how important it is when you get to this point. Because here's the thing people have to remember. Every quarterback you playing now is good. Every one of them can hurt you, usually when you get to these points. And they've had the opportunity to not only up their level of play, but I go back and I'm going to keep saying it until the season is over. Our own Mina Kimes said,
you know what's coming.
The Kansas City Chiefs stars show up. they did against the Buffalo Bills. Once again, the big name paid players were the ones that we watched make plays all over the field and guys that they took high in the draft. So, look, Chris Jones up front, Okafor, Frank Clark, those guys did a tremendous job. And the one job they did as well was to keep Josh confined in the pocket. They rushed smart. They gave up a couple scrambles, but nothing devastating. They have married this thing, and this defense raised their level last year in the playoffs, and they're doing it again as we watch it.
And now they got to do it against Tom Brady, who we all know has had all kinds of experience with talented defense. Let's get Adam Schefter back in here. Adam, open up your notebook for us. Give us the latest around the NFL. Let's start with Sammy Watkins and his injury in Kansas City.
Well, Laura, the Chiefs were not overly optimistic that he would play in the conference championship game, which he didn't. But the fact that he was starting to practice some on a limited basis is an encouraging sign. And the thinking is, according to Dan Orsini, that he's going to be ready to play in Super Bowl 55. Keep in mind, Watkins played just 10 games in the regular season, but he was fifth on the team with 37 receptions. They also should be getting back Le'Veon Bell, who had swelling in his knee in the week of the conference championship game when he didn't practice at all. But with the extra week off there and a week off this week leading up to Super Bowl 55, the sense and belief is that Le'Veon Bell will be back in time for Super Bowl 55. And Buffalo Bills defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier, eliminated by the Chiefs on Sunday, is free to talk with the Houston Texans about their head coaching job. He is having a second interview. I think a lot of people view Leslie Frazier as the favorite for this job, the man most likely to get the job. However, Jim Caldwell still in contention, David Culley still in contention. They've spoken to Eric Bieniemy. We'll see what direction they go, but a lot of people feel like Frazier could be the leader in the clubhouse at this point in time, Laura.
Oh, and this is Mock Draft 1.0 for the 2021 class. Mel, let's start with you. Nobody arguing Trevor Lawrence is the number one overall pick, right? So all eyes will be on who's the next quarterback off the board. You have Zach Wilson. Let's start there. Over Justin Fields. So fourth to Atlanta for Zach Wilson, seventh to Detroit for Justin Fields. How do you differentiate those two QBs?
I went back and forth on this probably about 10 to 15 times, Laura, and I think you look at it on my ratings board. If you go to ESPN.com over last month, I've had Justin Fields consistently ahead of Zach Wilson, just slightly. But I think when you look at Zach, the momentum he's gained, this is a mock draft. This isn't about what my ratings are. So I put Zach there based on the momentum, the kind of year he had, and I've said it all year. It's against cupcakes, but it's still impressive performances, and those throws that you're seeing with Zach, doesn't matter who you're making them against, they're still big-time NFL throws. The mobility, the athleticism, the fact he cut down on the mistakes, the turnovers, he wasn't as reckless as he had been prior to having that shoulder. Coming back from it, wasn't 100% in 2019. He put together, Laura, a phenomenal year for BYU. Granted, against a less-than-impressive schedule, only two ranked teams, but the fact that he makes those wow throws all the time and was so consistent game in and game out is the reason I think maybe he goes slightly ahead of Fields. I still like Justin a little bit better. But I think when you look at where they'll go come late April, right now, I give a slight lean to Zach Wilson.
Yeah, Dan and his Dan Dana here. Let's start with you, Dan, when you hear about what Mel just said. And listen, I think for when you think about Wilson, a lot of it has to do with the fact that he played at BYU. And then you got Justin Fields played at Ohio State. Certainly the cachet of the programs factor in there. What are your thoughts between those two quarterbacks? We know Trevor Lawrence is number one. It gets real interesting after that.
Yeah, I guarantee Mel rocks an Ascot and it absolutely blasts crab cakes on the Chesapeake Bay at some point this summer as well. But, you know, I think the reality with looking at both these quarterbacks, right, is Zach have a lot of, like, Aaron Rodgers in his game. You know, like, you'll see both feet off the ground and him rip balls downfield. He'll have a lot of Patrick Mahomes type of stuff in his game, those jaw-dropping throws that people are going to look at and be like, man, all those traits are so enticing. But when I look at Justin Fields, it almost takes me back to watching Justin Herbert, because I remember calling Justin Herbert's games and being like, okay, everything's there. The physical talent, the mental talent, the intangibles, the intellect, all that stuff. But he'd have some games, you'd be like, why is it not happening? You look the part in every aspect. Why is it not happening? And Justin Fields is many ways like that, like incredibly talented, great thrower with the football, super smart, competitive, big time athlete. But there were some games this year where you go, why is that happening? The traits and the talent don't match up with how you're playing on the field in some moments. And so I think Justin Herbert's like a really good teaching tool for a lot of people, myself included, watching Justin Fields and going, okay, it's the traits. It's actual traits over the 6 to 8 to 15 plays that we didn't like on tape this year.
Hmm. Mina, what about
that point.
Yeah, go ahead, Mina. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm about to give a compliment to Dan, even though that's not an ascot. You look like the world's least intimidating bank robber right now. But you did make a very good point, Dan, about Herbert and sort of the lessons there, because, you know, I think similarly to Herbert with Fields, it really is all about where he ends up. It's the traits, but it's also the destination and the infrastructure. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about those two young quarterbacks and where they should end up. One thing about Mel's mock draft that really struck me was you had Atlanta taking Wilson at 4. And Atlanta's a really interesting team to watch in this draft, Mel. I think you would agree, because they already have a quarterback, and financially, he cannot leave this team next year. So if they were to take another quarterback, Zach Wilson at 4, you're talking about the Falcons committing nearly $50 million in cap space to the quarterback position next year. With a win-now roster, but they'd be allocating valuable draft capital to a player who is not helpful in 2021. So, in my opinion, if they're to make that move, and personally I would probably stick with Ryan, but if they were, they would have to love Zach Wilson or Justin Fields and think he's the next Pat Mahomes, because otherwise it is too expensive for that team.
Hmm. Well, I would just
Go ahead, Mel.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Mel, what do you see the depth like in this draft outside of the quarterback position? Like, how is that? You got a lot of quarterbacks going in the first round. Does that have anything to do with the rest of the positions and how many guys are first-round talents at that?
No, I think they're forced up every year, Marcus. You think about the quarterbacks, they always get pushed up the board. Everybody needs them. I think the meanest point about Atlanta, that, you know, you think about the age of Matt Ryan up there at 36. Aaron Rodgers was in Green Bay. They drafted Jordan Love, not with a fourth pick, later in the first round. But I think you have an heir apparent there and somebody you can move on with maybe in year two. And I think certainly Justin Fields could be in this mix as well. Justin Fields, 2019 season, going back to Dan O's point, 2019, Justin Fields was better than Zach Wilson was this year. So you look at those numbers, 41 touchdowns for Justin, 3 picks, rushing yards almost double what Zach had, and they're both very athletic. Okay, touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, exactly the same. Completion percentage was 67 for Justin, 73 for Zach, but the competition was different. So this is a tough debate. I just think momentum right now, when you talk about mock draft, maybe on the side of Zach right now. It's a long time to late April. I still rate, in my own ratings, field slightly ahead of Wilson. And you can't forget about Trey Lance and the talent he has at North Dakota State. He played one game. Wasn't great throwing, was great running, brought them back for a come-from-behind victory. He's in there. And then, of course, Mac Jones at Alabama. So to your point, Marcus, I think it's really going to be a strong draft. The opt-outs are going to be the tough evaluations, and those are the kids that are going to be really factored in when you say, okay, you go with a kid who played and played well. The opt-out might have played a little bit better, might have a little more talent, but you haven't seen him for a couple of years. I think that whole opt-out situation really complicates matters when you talk about evaluating players this year.
Yeah, and Mel, that's why the Senior Bowl is so important this year, too, with no NFL Combine. And you think about, you know, this is your mock draft 1.0, like you told us. I can't wait to see your next one after things change a little bit after the Senior Bowl. This year, so much more weight being put into the Senior Bowl. Why is that?
Because of the opt-outs and this uneven season and some guys. Dylan Raiden's the left tackle for Trey Lance at North Dakota State, will be down there. Dylan Raiden's played one game against Central Arkansas October 3rd. Nico Collins, wide receiver, Michigan, led the Big Ten with a 19.7-yard average per catch. Didn't play this year. Ambry Thomas, cornerback, Michigan, real good in 2019. Didn't play this year. You think about Jamie Newman, good year at Wake Forest in 2019. Transfers to Georgia, doesn't play. He's down there. So we'll see how those guys play in Mobile. It'll go a long way in determining where they go in late April.
Mel's day not even close to being over yet. He's front and center over on ESPN2 at 5 Eastern. Right when our show's done, just flip right over there. Wall-to-wall coverage of his latest mock draft. Thanks so much, Mel, for joining us.
Thank
we'll see a lot more of you on NFL Live as we get closer and closer to the draft. Let's get to another quarterback who the league is very familiar with. Matthew Stafford and the Lions have agreed to move on from each other, which adds another wrinkle in an already fascinating offseason when it comes to the quarterbacks. It's like musical chairs. It's already begun in the National Football League. And this thing's about to get wild. Look at this from Adam Schefter yesterday. Stafford, not the only quarterback on the move. This is Schefter's tweet from yesterday. He says there could be over 18 quarterbacks hanging in the balance, changing teams this offseason. That could definitely make one of the most interesting offseasons in NFL history. So, Adam, let's start with you and the timeline for Matthew Stafford getting out of Detroit. How much time is really factoring in here?
Laura, I think the timeline on Matthew Stafford is a lot quicker than any other quarterback this offseason. It's already out there that he's moving on. The Detroit Lions have made that decision with him. They're already listening to calls from teams that are calling in and trying to see what it would take for Matthew Stafford. Now, again, no formal offers, but discussions about how quickly this could happen, what it might take. And so conversations in terms of trading Matthew Stafford are underway. Now, the trade cannot be processed until the middle of March when the new league year begins. But if you remember when Alex Smith got traded, the agreement was reached between the Washington football team and Kansas City the week of the Super Bowl and then was processed 6 or so weeks later, and Alex Smith became a member of the Washington football team. And I think you're looking at a similar timeline here where in the next couple of weeks something could be agreed to and then would be processed when the new league year begins in mid-March.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Dan might have frozen. Dan, can you hear me?
No, I'm not frozen.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yep.
He's still with us.
Okay, so it's important for everyone to pay attention to what's about to get said from me, because the reality is 2019, one season ago, halfway through the year, there's five guys that are in the MVP conversation. Matthew Stafford was one of them. He was lighting the league on fire. If you're a team that is in the Deshaun Watson conversation, that you look at your organization as a front office and say, we can upgrade the quarterback spot if we go get Deshaun, and it's too rich for you, you should immediately pivot to Matthew Stafford. Because you can absolutely upgrade your quarterback position with Matthew Stafford. And if you're talking about a team like the San Francisco 49ers, you're back to being Super Bowl contenders. If you're talking about a team like the Indianapolis Colts, you're automatically Super Bowl contenders. There's, 15 teams that if they go get Matthew Stafford are now like deep contenders. So if you're into Deshaun conversation, get into the Matthew Stafford conversation. You're going to get one of the more talented players in the league at the position.
First of all, I got a tremendous amount of respect for Matt Stafford. Listening to dudes that played with him, everybody loves him as a teammate. Dan knows that firsthand, but he has a lot of respect from the guys that's around him. That's number one. I think people kind of, you know, it's kind of not talked about enough how difficult it is to go into a new NFL locker room. Now, obviously, he has cachet, and everybody knows who Matt Stafford is in this league, but you still got to go earn the trust of them guys. You still have to go and play your way into them believing that you can take them where they're trying to go. And I can't think of no better place than New Orleans, y'all.
Ooh.
The Saints are ripe for Matt Stafford. When you think about Sean Payton, you think about the arm talent that Matt Stafford has. He's playing with Alvin Kamara. They already contenders. That position, if he goes and plays quarterback for the Saints, they may be Super Bowl favorites. That's how much Matt Stafford would put forward with this team. So, look, I know the cap situation, Mina, before you get all grown and adultish on what we're talking about. I already know.
Marcus.
But let me live my fantasy and think about Matt Stafford with the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Saints Luke having Chris. An opportunity to go to the Super Bowl.
Mina's over there like, they're already like $80 million over the cap. Like, there's no way. But Marcus, you live in your fantasy land, okay? It's all right.
Let Mina, us have fantasy land.
I love it. There's no roller coasters in that fantasy land.
Get his ludicrous on.
Yeah. Whatever. All right, Mina, take us inside the situation from the Lions' perspective. Like, what did their trade partners really look like?
I love Marcus anticipating my head exploding when he mentioned the Saints, because I was just picturing Mickey Loomis, you know, digging under the sofa cushions for spare change. There are teams that have draft capital and cap space. There are a bunch who can go after Stafford, and we can talk about what's ideal for Stafford from a football perspective, but the reality is the Lions would be giving up a lot by letting him walk in terms of a financial charge, and of course he's a viable starter. They need to get something in return. I keep hearing the Colts as a likely destination. Obviously that makes a ton of sense, but look right here, you got four teams picking ahead of Indianapolis in the draft with picks that they should be willing to trade for Stafford. All four of these teams should be in the mix. And I actually think they're good destinations for Matthew, obviously San Francisco, but how about Washington? That team is a quarterback away from being a contender. In my, like, they get, you know, with Stafford, you get to play in the NFC East. You have a dominant defense, number one wide receiver in Terry McLaurin, a great young running back in Antonio Gibson. So it's not just the Colts and the Niners who should be in the mix for him. I think there's a number of teams that can, should be right on the phone to Detroit right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because when Mina mentioned Washington, there was like stank faces from both Marcus and Dan. And we're going to keep moving here, guys. But I will say, Mina, I think the key there is NFC East. You're in a division that's so winnable when you look around.
Facts.
I know, and that's a really good
fact.
That's
where my stank face came from. My stank face came from the fact that she always got
I'm stuff still
to
reeling from the fact that Marcus
argument.
Doesn't like roller coasters.
Yeah, we're going to get over it, though, Dan, because we got a lot more to get to today. So, Dan, you heard Mina Kimes talking at the beginning of that about how Tom Brady, or Thomas Brady, knew that this Tampa Bay defense was really good. And when you think about Brady riding the defense to the Super Bowl appearance, watching the film, though, you thought it came very close to not happening. So explain to us why.
Yeah, Ruddy, coming out of the game, the two big plays that have been conversation are the third down, should Aaron Rodgers have run, and then the fourth down decision to kick the field goal. But I think it actually starts first down of that kind of potential game-winning drive. Really pay attention to these flips and see how it all happens. So they get into that 3x0 formation, and Rodgers is going to signal at the line of scrimmage a route combination for Davante Adams on this RPO. He's trying to get a little bluff slant behind. Now, again, it's an RPO. You got six blockers at the line of scrimmage, and look at the shell of the defense. Everything's same, man. Just hand that ball off. One guy might tackle Dylan backside. It's Dean. He might put his head on the goalpost. He decides to throw it, miscommunication, incompletion. Now, this one's important. Second down, it's match coverage. Everybody is going to be double teamed. No one accounting for Aaron Rodgers. Now, pay attention to Rodgers here. Puts his foot in the ground. There's that seam. It almost looks like third down. Now, take off, right? This is often where we see Aaron Rodgers go and take off. But look at the defense collapse on him. He can't get away. I think that affects third down. Same type of coverage, same type of scheme. Now, look it. Here's that seam. Here it comes. Put your foot on the ground to run, and he decides not to run, even though to us it looks wide open, and he throws into double coverage and incomplete. I second down, like, attempted scramble by Aaron Rodgers, and him realizing, dude, I didn't get away. I couldn't get away. They clamped down on me, actually affected the third down, should Aaron Rodgers have run or not. So first down, missed opportunity. You could hand that ball off, and you might hit your head on the goalpost. And how second down in that Bucs front converging on him, I really believe impacted his decision to not run on third.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Mina.
Sorry, Mina, go.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. Jumping off of, well, you're going to like what I'm about to say, Marcus, because I'm going to praise those defensive tackles, and I know you love that. Jumping off of Dan's points, talking about those plays, because I was looking at the inside of the Bucs defensive line. We've been talking a lot about JPP and Shaq Barrett, but Ndamukong Suh, Steve McClendon, Vita Vea, 350-pound Vita Vea, who shattered his ankle, okay, was stuffing those A gaps like the Mucinex guy from the commercials, just plugging them up. I mean, he's a mountain of a man, and he was pushing the pocket like crazy. That is going to be so important. It was impactful in this game, the pressure they got with just a four-man rush, as you see here, because Rodgers couldn't step up in the pocket when it was collapsing. You know that's going to be impactful going forward. We're going to say the words four-man rush like 1,000 times between now and the Super Bowl. But those players, it wasn't just JPP and Shaq Barrett. It's Sue, McClendon, Vea. They make a massive difference on that Bucs defense.
Yeah, and Mina, Marcus relishes every single time that you say that four-man rush. So let's talk about this. The Buccaneers have scored 41 points off turnovers this postseason. That's tied for the third most points off turnovers in a single postseason in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. The last two teams to record 40-plus points off turnovers went on to win the Super Bowl, by the way, including the Buccaneers in 2002. So, Marcus, how does defensive coordinator Todd Bowles really set this team up for success on the defensive side?
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, one thing he does is rely on the talent and guys winning their one-on-ones and then figuring out from a schematic standpoint of where can I attack. And I will say this, this is the first time this year. I think he had a little bead on Aaron Rodgers for a lot of this game because he dared to play man. After he saw that four-man rush winning and the pressure that they were getting on him, he said, guys, we going to have to lock up to make him just hold this ball an extra half a second. And that's what they did. They used all of their coverage. Whitehead played tremendous. Devin White and Levante David did a tremendous job in the intermediate area. Todd Bowles found something, and he started driving into it. He started fighting to keep that consistency for his defense, and that's what won the day.
We will have so much more conversation about the Super Bowl as we get closer and closer to that. Time for one more thing before we go. And it's been a year since we lost Kobe and Gianna Bryant and still doesn't feel real. And that's from a distance, right? To those close to Kobe and Gigi, I can only imagine the hurt is often unbearable, especially on days like today. We wanted to share some memories of Kobe and Gigi and some thoughts on their greatness. I want to start with Adam Schefter here.
Well, Laura, you still remember a year ago today being at the Pro Bowl and getting the word that Kobe Bryant had died in the helicopter crash. I happened to have my then 11-year-old daughter with me, and it just goes to show you how it impacted so many people of so many different ages because she was very emotional about it, and she didn't even know Kobe, didn't watch him play, but it impacted her as much as it did anybody else I saw that day.
So this news broke right before the Super Bowl, and I think what struck me or what strikes me about the memory is how affected so many NFL players were who were inspired by his career, some who knew him personally. I remember Richard Sherman talking about it during media week in Miami. Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark called him his idol. Clearly, this is an athlete whose legacy transcended sports and continues to do that to this day.
Listen, for me, I'm taking it on the court because it's so many memories, especially the father-daughter, but 60 in his final NBA game, 22 for 50 from the field goal, vintage Kobe, give me the rock and everybody move out the damn way. I'm about to do this thing. He put a magnificent performance for his last one on the court, and we'll all remember that one.
Yeah, you know, fans, many ways, revere athletes, admire, idolize athletes because they do things that the normal people can't, right? They just watch them perform athletically, and that's what grows that admiration. They point to him and say, you're so unlike me. But when I remember hearing Kobe talk about his daughter and the love that he has for his daughters and saying that the daughters were going to carry on his family name, that made this endearing kind of move Kobe to so many of us.
Yeah, thinking of Vanessa, Natalia, Bianca, and Capri today and always, hoping for some peace for all those families who lost loved ones on this horrible day last year. I'd like to end with one of my favorite Kobe quotes. He said, "The topic of leadership is a touchy one. A lot of leaders fail because they don't have the bravery to touch that nerve or strike that chord. Throughout my years, I've never had that fear." Kobe Bryant. We'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live.